Welcome to Common Ground YYC on Livewire Calgary.
Reviendra à la ville de Calgary. Calgary! Here come the
Flames! Champions! Today, Calgary is a different place than it was yesterday.
Welcome to Common Ground YYC. I'm your host, Josh White. Today's guest is Mayor Nahed Nenshi. Mayor Nenshi is certainly someone who doesn't need much of an introduction. For those who don't know, I was a member of Mayor Nenshi's staff in the mayor's office for a little over 4 years, from the time he entered office in 2010 to the beginning of 2015. I was a senior policy advisor for Mayor Nenshi and focused on issues including planning and development in our city, transportation, secondary suites, and a host of other issues. Today's conversation focuses on two main issues. The first thing we touch on is the mayor's political philosophy and issues of partisanship in our politics today. The bulk of the episode is focused on the Olympic Games, and I was really happy that we could talk about the Games, and I felt that the mayor really opened up quite a bit about his views on the process and his personal views on the Olympic Games and the Olympic bid. So you'll really not want to miss that conversation. I thought it was excellent. We actually did touch on a third topic in the time he had, but I felt that the discussion was just simply too truncated. It was too short to really do justice to the issue we were talking about, which was planning and development. So instead of publishing that discussion, we agreed that we would try and record a part two and hopefully really do that topic justice and touch on a few more. So you'll notice that the runtime of the episode is quite short, but we're hoping to bring you a part two. So we'll certainly keep you apprised of whether we're able to make that happen. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy part one. And now, Mayor Nahed Nenshi. Nahed Nenshi, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. I'm excited about this, Josh. You're getting people to talk about important stuff.
No, it's been great so far, and really appreciate you coming on. I'm gonna call you Nahed because I remember I was one of the few people that actually would call you Nahed. I remember you complaining during my time in the office that people would just call you by your last name.
Yes, Nenshi. That's very true. It's very true. Not even Mayor Nenshi. Have we disclosed our relationship already?
I will do so in the intro. Full disclosure that we know each other. I used to work for you. It's come up in previous podcasts, but. But I want to just look back a little bit in time when I became involved in sort of the movement. You know, it was sort of dubbed the Purple Revolution. It was sort of a very overt understanding of how you thought politics should be, sort of in two ways. One, sort of the politics and full sentence aspects where you're really diving deep into issues. And then the other piece was sort of the sort of cross-partisan or multi-partisan view, the sort of purple being the mix of the red and blue. And that's what this show's hopefully to be about, the sort of common ground idea. So that was the idea. That was the movement. Now, reflect on, you know, you've been in office now 8 years. How do you think in the context of running the city and governing council and chairing council that has gone?
You know, before I go there, I'll say there was a third thing.
Okay.
And the third thing is actually where you come in. And the third thing was thinking about the city in a different way.
Okay.
And thinking about urban issues in a different way. Because, you know, the way I met you, Josh, is because you were just a smart guy on the internet who talked about urban issues.
Right.
And I hadn't even met you, right? You just sort of said, well, you seem to be saying many of the same things I'm saying. How can I help on the campaign? And you ended up helping a lot on the campaign. And then there's a great story about how the day I was elected was also the day you lost your job in Toronto.
Yeah.
And lucky me and lucky Calgary. But so there were kind of three things there. And the reason I wanted to highlight that is because this piece about urban issues is actually where the cross-partisanship, where the purple comes from.
Okay.
Because, you know, the common phrase all the time is there's no right wing or left wing way to clear the snow.
Right.
And so what we found was that thinking about the future of the city, being forward thinking about what we want to build together, allowed us, by and large, to transcend the partisanship mm-hmm. and really get to competing and compelling visions of what the city needs to be. So, you know, in all three councils I've worked with, and I know you want to get to the topic of how things have changed, but in all three councils I've worked with, what I really love is that you can never predict the vote. And almost in every meeting, we get a completely different vote split. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have the really self-identified right-wing councillors and the self-identified left-wing councillors coming together. Sometimes I call that the Drew Chu Alliance.
The Drew Chu Alliance.
Which does happen.
It's happening right now.
It's happening right this minute on Chinatown. And so I really like that. And I think by and large, citizens like that. You know, there have been city councils in the past. And if you look at the giant city council in Toronto, that's all this drama has been about. The votes tend to be on partisan lines. And so moving beyond that, you know, it's funny. After 8 years, people still ask me why purple. And I always explain it's a combination of red and blue. So it's basically saying you don't have to be on one side of the political spectrum or the other. We can all work together. And to this day, when I say that, people go, oh.
Yeah.
But that concept is integral to the work that we have been trying to do. And in a world that is increasingly partisan and increasingly shrill, it's important for me in this job to constantly be reminding people that this is about something else. You know, I'll give you a good example, which is the Olympics that we're talking about right now. It has sort of devolved into some partisanship in the public discourse. But it has not on council. It's another good example of the Drew Chu Alliance, right? But at the same time, one of the challenges with the whole discussion around the Olympics is that it has sort of gotten into what I would describe as small P partisan ankle biting.
Right.
Rather than really having a big discussion about what is this possibility and what is this opportunity and should we be able to be grabbing it. And I think if we had had the same discussion about the Olympics for the 2022 Olympics, say back in 2011, we would have a very different public debate. And I think that really just is a symptom of how people are thinking about politics right now.
Great. I want to touch a little bit more on that partisan theme. And you talked a little bit about how on the municipal level, it doesn't often kind of rear its head in the traditional way where there's the layer of party politics around it. But there have been a few issues, you know, at least in my reflection of how the issue's gone. So I think of secondary suites.
Yeah.
I think of cycle tracks. I think of maybe even pedestrian issues and the conversation around that. And I just want to test a theory with you about maybe why those became perhaps more intractable issues than some others. And my theory is maybe there's a bit of a sort of a deep-seated philosophical underpinning around right and left about, you know, for example, you know, language from the left around sort of protecting the vulnerable. That's sort of the often default, the bias. Mm-hmm. And then on the right, maybe it's more of a default philosophical underpinning of, no, these are existing hierarchies, they're existing structures that make sense and they make good sense and they're worth protecting. It's not to say that either is wrong. It's just that they're coming from a different point of view. And the language often sort of short circuits and the two sides don't end up understanding each other.
I think you might have a point on cycle tracks.
Okay.
Because that particular issue, you know, I was the swing vote on that, as I often am on council, which is I believe in safety and reducing accidents and giving people choice, which is right-wing arguments, really. But also in more environmental sources of commuting and better choices that way. Maybe those are left-wing arguments. But I also wanted the cycle tracks to be done right. And to this day, I still think one of them I don't like. And I still, one of these days, will maybe get rid of that one. Anyway, but cycle tracks has become, cycle tracks everywhere have become a partisan issue. They've become a right versus left issue in many, many, many cities. And you really saw during the cycle track debate with my second council, the first council was unanimous, left wing, right wing didn't matter.
Right.
The second council, you really saw people reading from partisan songbooks on cycle tracks on both sides.
Yeah.
But you remember who the swing vote really was on cycle tracks? I like to say it was me. It's actually Councillor Chabot,
right?
Who's running for the UCP now, who would describe him as the most right-wing guy on council, but he fundamentally believed that giving people choice is a good one. I think the example that disproves your point is secondary suites.
Okay.
Because, in fact, secondary suites, the strongest argument for legalizing secondary suites is a right-wing argument. And it is property rights. You should be able to have the right to do with your property as you choose, as long as it doesn't infringe on your neighbor's properties. And you have a guy like Councillor Putman's at the time, who should have been the vote to finally get rid of secondary suites and couldn't bring himself to do it, even though I don't think he would argue that he believed that it was the right thing to do. He just felt that the citizens he represented, he couldn't do it because they were so vehemently opposed. And so I actually don't agree that these deep-seated partisan things come in. And in fact, we actually see on most issues around City Hall that it's a bit the opposite. You know, in fact, right now, I jokingly but actually quite seriously say that the most conservative member of City Council is me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm the one who's keeping an eye on the books and making sure that we're not spending money recklessly where a lot of other people have sort of projects that they would really like to fund. But maybe I'm also the most left-wing member of council because I believe in reconciliation, I believe in inclusion and diversity and opportunity for everyone. The point I'm trying to make is that these labels are meaningless.
Right.
And I think they're meaningless, period. I think they're meaningless in the federal government. But I think particularly around the city council table, we try to look at issues and decide based on the issue. And what I don't like, which we sometimes see creeping into all city councils, including this one, is people start to act as though they're provincial or federal politicians and their vote is based on who's moving the item. And that's challenging, you know. Councillor Farkas, for example, moved a very straightforward item, which had to do with compensation for people who have been hurt by our flood mitigation works on the Glenmore Reservoir. And I was surprised that failed. You know, who's opposed to the Disabled Sailing Association getting compensation for their dock being out of service for a summer? But it failed. And in the debate, members of council actually said, I don't want to support it because you're the one bringing it up. And let's just say they got a lecture from me about that.
Yeah, and I think as they should. That's a dangerous path to go down, that sort of hyper-partisan mm-hmm. realm. Let's talk about a few issues now. You touched a little bit on the Olympics. I don't want to litigate the entire debate on the Olympics, but one aspect I wanted to talk about, and you've heard me talk about this before a little bit, is about kind of the idea of the need for sort of neutrality in the conversation, or perhaps the role that members of city council have had in the dialogue. And I feel like one of the challenges I've had with the discourse is there's this really big asymmetry on council between...
That's a really polite way of saying it.
Yeah, but, you know, being someone who's been vocal in favor, it's sometimes been a bit of a lonely place in the social media realm. And it seems like the no side has no misgivings about being as assertive as they possibly can in their opinion. But on the ones who are yes, firmly, or maybe more sympathetic to yes, I'd put yourself in that category too. Have been more reticent to be kind of overtly out there, not as maybe the voice of a yes, but even a voice in the yes side.
Well, look, it's been exceptionally bizarre, and if I can be a bit controversial, frankly disrespectful on the part of the opponents of the bid that they demand neutrality from everyone except themselves.
Right.
And they want everyone to be neutral, but they can say whatever they want. So they only really want people in favor to come off as neutral. And so I think that it's really important to draw a distinction as we're getting into this plebiscite between the levels of engagement with the public. So, you know, first of all, the city clerk, Elections Calgary, of course, they're totally neutral. They're just telling you where and when to vote, but they have an interest in high voter turnout. And so they want to encourage as many people as possible to vote in as many ways as possible. And some people will even argue that and say, well, they're getting traditionally non-voting people to vote and that favors one side or the other. That's ridiculous. It's a plebiscite. We want the largest sample possible. We want the most people to vote. Secondly, the city is engaging in what they're calling balanced engagement. I frankly don't know if this is a great idea or not, but it is happening. So we're going out with as balanced as possible an approach saying, you know, here are the costs, here are the benefits, this is what we're doing. The reason I'm hesitating is because when you try to make something so balanced, you sometimes stretch because you have to have exactly the same number of risks and the same number of benefits on each item. And I think that's a bit of a foolish intellectual exercise. But the idea there is to go out to the community and just kind of say, look, here's some pros and cons, and let's figure out if this makes any sense. Then the next level down is the bid committee, Calgary 2026. And when council set up the bid committee, they explicitly said the role of this committee is to win the bid. Mm-hmm. So obviously they're going to advocate for the bid. So it's a bit ridiculous for some members of council now to say, oh, Mary Moran should not be speaking in favor of the bid. She's the CEO of the bid committee. Of course she's going to speak in favor of the bid. Now, they shouldn't get involved in sort of a lot of electoral get out the vote, voter identification stuff, but they absolutely should be advocating for the bid. At the next level down, you have probably you're going to have multiple yes and no groups coming forward. There will be official ones, quote unquote, but that doesn't really mean anything other than they're registered with the city clerk. And given our terrible campaign finance laws, it doesn't really put any restrictions on them either. But, you know, they will come out and they will be more like political campaigns.
Yes.
You know, identifying voters, getting people to vote, and that's totally fine. Which then comes to the members of council. And I think the question that was behind the question you were asking, which is, hey, Mayor, why are you always so balanced? You know, so for me, it's not so much that I'm pro-Olympics, that I'm pro a great deal for Calgary.
Okay.
And I don't have that deal in my hands yet.
Okay.
We will have it soon, and citizens will have the chance to make that decision once that deal is public. But I'll tell you this, if I've got a deal that I think is a great deal for Calgary, I am not going to be shy about telling people I think it's a great deal for Calgary. And I'm encouraging every member of council, whichever side they're on, is not be shy and get out there and talk. You know, the opponents, you're right, have dominated the conversation. But this is a real interesting idea of the disconnect between social media and actual people. Because every poll has shown a slim to healthy majority for the yes side. If you were to go on social media or the comments on news sites, you would think 98% of people are opposed.
Right.
And is that a mistake on the part of people in favor? Maybe. But I think everyone in favor would say, I'm not in favor at any cost.
That's right.
I need to know what the deal is.
Yeah.
And I actually am very optimistic. I think that we're going to get a deal that people will go, yeah, that's a great deal. But I can't say that until I got someone's signature on a piece of paper.
That's great. So beyond, you know, a great deal, just as citizen Nenshi, I know you're a big kind of Olympics buff. What about the games, you know, beyond just being selfishly a good deal for Calgary, yeah. What do you think, just in a few ways, it can be a positive for our city if we get the right deal? So
I think we should discuss that at three levels. One is about the right deal, and I won't belabor the point. But the whole idea is that, as you know, taxpayers in Calgary send far more money to the provincial and federal governments every year than we get back in federal and provincial services. And if this is an opportunity to recoup some of that investment, you know, people say, oh, it's the tax dollars of people in Toronto going to it. No, it's the tax dollars of people in Calgary that have always been going somewhere else, staying in Calgary.
Yeah.
I call it a tax rebate. That's a good thing. But you're right. We have to go way beyond that. What do the Olympics mean for a community? So the first level is really about sport. We have created a really good place for Calgary, a good positioning for Calgary as a center for winter sport. You know, world records are broken every season on the ice at the Olympic Oval still today. We host 150 plus World Cup and World Championship events. It's a big boon for tourism. It's a big boon for bringing people and students here because, you know, everyone trains here. So you get a bunch of interesting students at the University of Calgary and Mount Royal University who then a lot of them will stay and start businesses and so on. So it really is a very nice niche for Calgary, and it's a great opportunity to reinvent that niche for a new generation.
Right.
You know, if we can get back on people's radar, we can host things like the X Games and other big events because of the halo effect around the Olympics. I think that that is a very, very positive thing for sport. It's positive for elite athletes. And I think there is a public benefit to promoting high-level sport. But it's not just high-level sport, of course, because that high-level sport serves as an umbrella for kids participating in the same sport at amateur levels. It serves as an umbrella for a healthier community, for outdoors, all of this stuff that, you know, it may not look like I'm really keen on. But you have to invest in healthy communities, in healthy opportunities, especially for kids. you know, the two things I'm most excited about in the bid itself are the field house. Mm-hmm. You know, if you talk to anyone whose kids play soccer, they would tell you how desperately needed that field house is. And this is a great way to not only get the field house, but get an enhanced version of it that it'll serve for the Olympics as well, for soccer, for track and field, for indoor sports in the winter. So I think that's really great. The other thing on a slightly different note that I'm excited about is the affordable housing component. Mm-hmm. This would actually be the largest investment in affordable housing in Calgary's history. If we make it through, and it would make a significant dent in our affordable housing deficit in Calgary. So that's also pretty exciting. The next level, though, is really about, and this is going to sound a bit cheesy, but it's incredibly important. For cities to succeed, we have to have aspiration. We have to be able to dream big. And that's what's gotten Calgary where we are. Let's not forget, like, we're so Canadian about this. We poo-poo such things. We were ranked the best city in North America to live in this summer, the fourth best in the world.
Yeah.
We got 100% on every category except the weather, where we got 97 out of 100.
And now we're going to get, like, 80 out of 100.
Yeah, they didn't do it this week, thank goodness. But that's a big freaking deal.
Yeah,
we're a small size city on the global scale. And for the economists to say we're the best city in the Western Hemisphere to live in, that's a big deal. And it means we are capable of amazing things. And we have to really think about what can catalyze us to be able to do that. Can it be the city that solves mental health and addiction? Can it be the city that eliminates poverty? Or can you use an event like the Olympics to catalyze that kind of vision, that kind of dream for the community? You know, on a totally different note, I happen to know a little bit about you, and I know you're an architecture nerd and a skyscraper geek, right?
Yeah, I've been outed a few times on the podcast already.
And so I actually believe that there are two things happening in Calgary right now that remind us of what we're capable of. So in a few weeks' time, I am going to cut the ribbon on one of Architectural Digest's 10 most anticipated buildings in the world. It is going to win architectural awards all over the world. And the best part is it's free and open to every Calgarian because it belongs to them.
You're talking about the Central Library, of course.
Well, no, I was talking about a new bungalow that's being built. No, of course I'm talking about the new Central Library.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, people always ask me, why did you have to make it so beautiful? We could have built a box and put books in it, right? But that's a symbol. And by the way, it wasn't that much more expensive to make it so beautiful.
Right.
But it is a symbol for us to be able to say to every Calgarian that this is a statement of our civic identity.
Yeah.
That this is a place where you belong. Whether you're a refugee who has just arrived here and you walk into this building, or if you're the mayor and you look at how beautiful it is and you realize this is for me. This community cares enough about me to make this place for me. That's a big deal. And it sets an aspiration of what we're capable of doing. The other is on the skyline every day we're seeing that new Engels building, Telus Sky,
yeah,
going up. And when that's topped off and people see what a unique piece of architecture it is,
yeah,
I think people will also say, we're capable of something here. And I like to put the Olympic project into that context as well, that we are capable of doing something amazing for the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that we talk about the Olympics, people say, well, Vancouver was $7 billion. How can you do it for $5 billion? That makes no sense because we're not doing the Vancouver Olympics.
Right.
You know, whenever anyone says that to me, I'll say, well, Sochi was $50 billion. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
Pyeongchang was $12.5 billion. We're not doing that either.
Right.
What we're trying to do here is show that you can refurbish facilities for a new generation, that you can do this in a cost-effective way and still gain all these benefits from it. And I think that's something that will really show the world that we have capabilities in Calgary that others don't. And I'll be blunt about one thing. People are like, obviously it's going to cost more than that. Well, first of all, we've done more work on the budget than anyone has ever done at this stage of a bid. You know, Stockholm and Italy don't even have budgets.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, let's not forget that Calgary is one of the few governments where every single project comes in on time and under budget. You know, I actually just had a list of the largest public works projects since I've been mayor. Only one of them went over budget. That was the West LRT, and that was before my time.
Yeah.
But we're actually pretty good at this.
Yeah.
And so that's something else we can share with the world.
No, that's great. And even if we end up not going for it, it's still a good exercise to go through. Just much like the Amazon bid, it forces us to be self-reflective about what's good in our community, what's missing. Well, I'm getting the heave-ho from Darcy over here.
Who?
So I know he's leaving you, unfortunately. But
yeah, so that'll be interesting. Everybody's leaving me. I know. I'm so lonely now.
It'll be lonely, but maybe a chance for some new ideas.
Well, you know, what's been great about it is, Josh, you were the first to leave, and you started a stampede to the exit. It took several years because your colleagues are not that smart. No, one of the wonderful things about being in this job for so long is, you know, political offices, people turn over fast. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
And I've been really happy that the vast majority of my team stuck with me through the entire two terms. And at the beginning of the third term, I said, all right, let's do some career development and figure out what's right for each person as we move on. So it's really wonderful that people are taking this experience and they're going to take this level of community spirit and engagement and move on to different things.
Great.
And some of them will just become filthy, sneaking lobbyists, but that's okay.
Harsh, but true. All right. Thanks again for joining us, and look forward to talking again.
Thanks very much, Josh.
Okay.
Common Ground YYC is a production of Livewire Calgary. If you value quality local journalism, please consider supporting Livewire by following it on social media, by clicking and reading stories, advertising, or contributing directly via Patreon. Visit livewirecalgary.com.